Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo.
This episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show, we'll dissect the juicy innards of the upcoming releases and tell you whether or not the next wave of distros are innovative or rehashed garbage. Then, Microsoft sues Motorola over patent violations. Is this a strategic attack against Android? We discuss. Plus, organizing your massive collection of the Linux Action Show just got a whole lot easier. We give you all the details. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show. And welcome to this episode of the Linux Action Show, this season 13, episode 10 of the Linux Action Show, this final episode of season 13 of the Linux Action Show. My name is Brian.
Hey there, Brian. My name is Chris.
And I made you say your own name.
I did?
I don't normally do that.
Hey there,
Brian. That's the specialness of the final episode of season 13. You got to hear Chris say his own name.
I don't even realize.
You're welcome.
I didn't even think of it. I just did it. It was like, it just happened, man.
Whoa.
Well, you know why?
That's an organic process.
I was daydreaming about these autonomous flying robots that run Linux, Brian. Check these things out. And this is just concept art.
All right. But there's real things, right?
Yeah, yeah. And these are really guys shooting them with lasers. And like this, there's a guy in this concept art who's preparing his laser gun who's going to shoot the guy.
Dude, I want a laser gun and a yellow hard hat to shoot an autonomous laser drone thing.
These things are real, though. They don't look quite as cool as that, but you can actually get them and fly them up in the air, and they run an embedded Linux OS on them, and then they even include a little control panel.
Look at those little things flying around. They look like birds.
I know, right?
They're awesome.
It's very cool.
That is way cool.
Yep.
Now, can you make those, or can you buy those?
They're a kit. They're a kit. Yep, you buy them and then you kind of snap them together and they fly. And that's actually what the guy's doing in this photo, is he's snapping together one of the planes before they go out into the air. They're actually not very big. They fit inside a box, but depending on the perspective to the camera, they look pretty big.
Dude, that's cool.
I don't think they actually shoot lasers or laser nets yet.
I think they just are drones that fly around.
But you know, you always want to, whenever you're building a flying robot, you want to build it with the ability to shoot things.
And honestly, the great part about that is, have you ever done remote controlled airplanes?
No, I have. Yeah,
I want
to.
I crashed immediately. I mean, really? So I would love to. Like, I'm afraid of flying myself. Like, I get inside an airplane and I freak out because, all right, that plane should fall.
Yeah,
if
it's
you
metal
think
in the
about
air.
It, what's holding it up? Are there strings from God holding the plane up? No,
I think it's Spider-Man.
Then it should fall. I'm sorry, and I do not buy the whole air going over the top of the wing makes the plane go up.
That's false.
That's ridiculous.
That doesn't work
air
like
should
that.
Blow from below it to shove the plane up, but that's not what's happening.
You know that's not what's happening.
Therefore, it freaks me out. I don't know why. It just freaks me out. I get the dynamics of it, the aero, what it's of it.
Yeah, if you believe it.
The thermo. Who's about
it? If you buy into that.
But seriously, I'm not gonna. I love the idea of like helicopters and remote airplanes, like stuff I can fly with a remote control safely on the ground. Yeah. However, they're expensive and I always crash them.
I always lose the money. I always, you know, whenever I drive by, there's a field here not too far from us. I always see guys out there flying their gas airplanes out there, and I'm always thinking, those things just look like they are just impossible to control.
And seriously, the ones with gas in it? You're begging for an explosion. You're just going to fly that right into a school with children.
Well, okay.
And kaboom. Children are going to be dead. Children's body parts flying everywhere.
See, that's
however,
why these,
if,
yeah,
if
they,
they're running Linux.
Right.
The Linux itself.
That never crashes.
The software is going to keep it running.
Yeah.
And you don't have to fly it.
Yeah, it's nothing to worry about.
I can feel brilliant. I can sit down. What I could do is I could launch like 10 of these. Sit there with one little controller and make everyone think like I'm the most amazing pilot in the world pretending to fly.
I want to figure out how to mount a camera.
That's the way to go.
So step one is cut a hole in the droid and install a camera. Step two is stream it to our box and then we can live stream it. And then step three is go ahead and open up that box to the internet. That's what I want to do.
Dude.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That'd be incredible.
Live streaming
actually.
Linux drones? Yeah.
Dude, yeah, especially if you could have four of them up with split screen of all four of them going.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that would be epic awesome.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Hey, should we, before we talk about the Android pick this week, should we give a little holler to the boys over at the GoDads?
We are, but here's what we're going to do for our season 13 finale here. You ready for it, Chris?
Lay it on me, B-Man.
I'm going to do it off script.
I like that.
Right.
GoDaddy.com.
This, you go to GoDaddy.com and you type in Linux when you check out and you save some money when you buy domain names and websites.
Yeah.
Linux saves you 10% off of whatever you buy. Linux 20 saves you 20%, but only off hosting.
You know what's funny?
Only off the hosting.
You know what's funny about GoDaddy is when you set up a Linux host, they have a control panel. You go in there, and if you already have one, you can just spin up a virtual host off of that. And I went in there, and I wanted to try out. You know, we use Google Docs for our show notes. And that just, I don't know, man. It just doesn't sit with me quite right. You know what I mean?
It doesn't sit with me either.
It's not
half
open.
The time it's down.
Yeah, well, it's buggy for sure.
And I can't use it.
It produces bad HTML. And then also, it's not open source. And I always want to, you know, I always want to try to use open source tools for Linux Action Show and stuff like that. And I thought, there must be an open source alternative to Google Docs.
Oh, yeah.
And so I started digging around, and I found a couple, but they all required PHP, Apache, MySQL, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I thought, I could like download something like XAMPP in like 15 minutes and get it going. I went over to the GoDaddies.com. We have a bunch of mirror networks for the shows here. I spun up one virtual machine in like 15 minutes. They're like down below, like, this may take up to, I don't know, so and so many hours before this machine's available. I'm like, well, I'll start it, go have dinner, and see. I came back already done. I threw a Google Docs competitor on there, which I don't remember the name of. I'll try to find it. Maybe I'll talk about it next episode. Threw that on there. Sweet, dude. I just drop it in there, ready to go. Within 15 minutes, I had a total new system up.
Really
nice.
Dude.
Testing out. And so now I'm going to try setting up a docs.jupiterbroadcasting.com.
Oh, that would be so awesome.
I know.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So, and you know what? If you're going to do something like that, you can use the code Linux20 and save yourself 20%.
God, I love that.
All right, I want to
talk everything about that.
I want to talk about my Android pick this week because it's a little self-indulgent, but it was kind of a neat deal. The folks over at Stitcher Podcast Radio contacted us a couple of weeks ago, and they're featuring us in their Linux and open source.
Of course they are.
Genre segment. Now, what Stitcher is, and it's available for pretty much I think it's available even for BlackBerry, for you crazy BlackBerry kids out there. And Stitcher takes different genres of podcasts and stitches them together like a radio station.
Nice.
So you know how you can tune into like a conservative talk show radio station or a liberal one or a news talk show and you always get those genre of things? This is the same thing. So you can turn into sports, open source, those kinds of genres of radios, and then it just downloads and streams podcasts like it would a radio station.
That's pretty cool, actually.
So
I like that.
We're in the Linux and open source section along with a lot of our other Linux podcasting buddies. So and some other well-known...
You mean our Linux podcasting nemesises?
Yeah, our arch anemones.
Our
arch anemone Linux nemesis. And they've got a bunch of other podcasts in there. It's a pretty good client. On Android, you can do a lot of things like set it to download in the background if you want, all those kinds of nice stuff. So check out Stitcher. I'll have links to it in the show notes. It's a really cool podcast client if you need a lot of shows. Mowing the lawn for a while.
Mowing the lawn for a
while. Doing the dishes for a while. Driving for a while. Check out Stitcher, and you can get our shows in there, too. That's not so bad, right?
Go in the bathroom.
Dude, totally. Going to be in there for like 2 hours.
I might be.
You never know.
Grab Stitcher.
You'll be good to go.
I'm set.
All right, Brian.
Solid.
Let's do the news.
Like a rock. What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. Our top story on the news docket for this week.
That was very, like, intense.
Like that?
That was...
Microsoft slaps...
Slow building.
Motorola... Slap? You like that?
That's what we do now here. Every time there is a word that is a verb that we can mimic through motion, we do it.
That's the poor man's soundboard right there.
Do we really need a soundboard, though? That kind of puts us down into that morning drive time talk show where they have like the slide whistle.
Hey, Brian, let's talk about Motorola getting sued by Microsoft.
You know, the horrible thing is, that's like our nemesis shows. That's what they make fun of us for. They're like, they're so over the top.
Yeah,
they're like a morning radio show.
You gotta get the joke. You gotta get
it.
So Microsoft is
suing. That's not what I'm going for, guys.
Microsoft is suing Motorola over Android.
Yeah.
Sort of along the lines of what Apple is suing HTC. And if you remember, interestingly, we covered a news story towards the beginning of the year about Microsoft signing a patent deal with HTC.
Yep.
And now they're suing Motorola, who did not sign a patent deal.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, you go in here and Microsoft says that well, these patents, you know, they cover things between syncing mail, like everything. They cover a wide range of phone functionality, like mail syncing, calendar syncing, and contact syncing. Okay.
That is such crap.
I know, right?
That is such bull. Like, I, over the last, like, you know, several months, I've kind of defended Microsoft a little bit because I'm like, you know what? They're not doing any of this bad crap.
They're not pulling the Apple thing where they're suing HTC over Android.
Right. And so I was like, great. And, guys, come on. Come on. I defended you.
One of the, I want to say.
Now you pull this stuff?
I want to say thanks to one of the commenters over at OSNews.com because he pointed out one of the patents, patent number 512678. Is being violated, reclaiming free storage space using a unidirectional stream protocol. That's one of the patents that Motorola is violating. Now, interesting, really, I mean, come on, everybody knows this is targeted against Android. This isn't really targeted towards Motorola. If you recall, though, the Motorola Click, a lot of these, Motorola has made a lot of Windows mobile phones in the past.
Yep.
So it's interesting to see Microsoft essentially suing one of its own business partners. Right?
Nah.
You don't think so?
They don't need Motorola.
No, I know they don't. And I think that's kind of their statement.
I think they realize that. You know what? They need you know, they need HTC.
They need HTC.
They need was it Omni and or
Samsung people like that. Yeah, I agree.
And now there's even rumors about Nokia making a Windows mobile phone. Though I'm thinking those are just rumors, but
so Motorola is getting attacked essentially for running the Android operating system.
That is a big Motorola logo behind us right now.
You like that?
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of ominous.
For those listening to the show and not watching it, you are missing out on the – it literally is
ominous
big.
Ominous logo is ominous.
It's like Big Brother behind us. You know, I never realized the bottom of the Motorola logo just looked like a butt.
Yeah.
I never realized that.
Or is that like a V-neck and these are – you know what I'm saying?
Nope.
Okay. All right.
Nope.
So,
don't know what you're saying.
They
They do kind of look like eyes.
Yeah, they do kind of look like eyes.
They're now, creepy and they're looking at you.
I haven't yet seen any information regarding the amount of damages that Microsoft is claiming, but it looks like this could go down one of those routes where they want to actually have Motorola.
They have undefined damages on it, yeah.
And they want to have Motorola stop shipping their product and things like that. Now, Microsoft says that the real reason they're doing this is to protect their clients.
Protect their
customers and their intellectual property because they say we spend billions of dollars a year developing this technology
and we
must defend it. I guess.
I mean, no. I mean, they spend a lot of money every year developing stuff. I mean, so does Google and all these other companies.
Right.
I mean, it's not like they're the only ones developing technology.
Now, I don't know if maybe they didn't license the ActiveSync technology from Microsoft, but they go on to say including email synchronization, calendars, and contacts, they're also talking about scheduling meetings and notifying applications of changes in signal strength and battery power.
What?
I mean, so are they going to be suing Nokia next and Samsung next? I mean, to me, I'm looking at this going, these are really, really
super general. Pretty basic things,
You've got clearing up free storage. You've got signal strength and battery power. You've got synchronizing calendars.
Honestly, this is a hell of a lot like when Apple sued Microsoft because there was Windows and mice and mouse.
Or when Apple sued HTC over sliding.
Oh, yeah.
Unlocked.
Started, yeah.
I mean, to me, this almost seems like collusion. It seems like Microsoft's going after Motorola and Apple's going after HTC, and they're taking these are the two big Android manufacturers by a big margin. They're going after those two people because, honestly,
They're not in bed together.
Well, back up. Look at Microsoft's history. Microsoft has a history of working with the people that they're competing against to get a leg up, and then Microsoft just figures once we reach to a point, we're going to be a big rolling snowball, and they're not going to be able to stop us. Anyways, Microsoft worked with Novell, right?
Yep.
Microsoft's worked with previous competitors in the past to be compatible, to work together, to embrace standards until they get to a point where they're now competitive enough and they no longer need that person. And they generally, at that point, have a product that they've reached to a point that they feel like, we can now just squash them. And it just seems like maybe Microsoft would reach out to Apple and say, hey, Apple, now that you got HTC taken care of, we'll take care of Motorola. Or maybe it's just that even from the very start, they decided this and they said, and Apple sat back. I could just see Jobs going, well, I really have no interest in working with Microsoft. But honestly, if they're going to take care of Motorola for us and we've already got HTC, that's less legal cost for us. And really, if Microsoft even just gets Motorola out of the game, we don't care because the iPhone's so amazing, we'll kick Windows 7. I can see like Apple having this arrogance about it, working with Microsoft, being like, sure, we'll work with you guys. Yeah, you guys are lame ducks.
I just don't see it. Like, I mean, honestly,
it just seems so close, though.
I can see Microsoft being a jerk. and going after people. I can see Apple being jerks and going after people. But I just don't see the two of them going together on it. Of course, I mean, there's no why.
What gets
would they,
me is how general the patents are. Is the patents are so general?
That's something I dislike.
And it seems like these could apply to any phone maker, and these are specifically targeted.
Now, if the patent specifically was something like, you know, syncing a contact via Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 over this specific Microsoft protocol, honestly, you know what?
I think
it would be stupid for Microsoft to sue them over it, but they could.
It's their own technology.
It's their own right.
Right.
Why not? But if it's something as simple as, you know, syncing email over IMAP or something like that, then I just got to say, what the heck are you guys doing? Because that's ridiculous.
I
really should look into it more. I should look into these patents to see.
Yeah.
Because patents have a tendency to have very generic names.
Yeah.
But when you get into the specific implementation, the whole thing is to get a patent, it needs to have a specific implementation.
It's enough uniqueness. It sounds really generic term, but it's I don't know, man. You look at this and it just seems like
there are a lot of patents around email. Now, and they all sound the same. They're like method for sending electronic documents or method for communicating electronically or things like that. But when you get into it, it's like a distinct description of POP or IMAP or SMTP or any of
and
these
varieties. And that's totally possible.
And that's fine.
That's totally possible.
I need to look into this before I say anything really too more extreme. But honestly, at the first glance, it does not look nice. I mean, this looks uncool.
You know what's so weird about this is you've got Microsoft, at the same time, the left hand is working with EFF to try to make it easier to invalidate patents. And then the right hand is going and suing Motorola. I don't know. Maybe my conspiracy theory is totally off, but it just seems to fit so well that, I mean, Apple and Microsoft, I think, are more buddies than they are enemies.
Right.
And I think we like to make it all up like there's this epic battle, but the reality is
Microsoft makes money off of Apple.
And Apple makes money off of Microsoft. I mean, is true. There's ways in which there's a reason why Macs dual boot Windows. They work together. There's not this battle. I wouldn't be too surprised. I'd be a little surprised if it turned out to be true, but I'd be like,
Is if Microsoft makes a lot of money off of Office for Mac, and if they pulled Office for Mac, Mac users may not want to think this, but half of the Mac install base would go away next year when new offices had to upgrade their machines and they couldn't get Office on them.
You've got to figure for corporate purchases. The fact that the Mac can run Microsoft Office has got to be a huge factor.
Big deal.
And so Apple needs Microsoft for that.
They absolutely need them. They are totally in their pocket. I mean, look at what happened. I mean, realistically, Apple's had a big resurgence. Mm-hmm. But if you actually track Apple's major resurgence time, it lines up really closely to when Microsoft redoubled their efforts and got a really nice version of Office out for Mac.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could point to it being a lot of other things on Apple's part, but it's really Microsoft jumped in. And I hope,
if nothing else, Microsoft helped finance the kickoff of all that. Right.
Yeah, right, exactly. So of course, they're interrelated, but come on. If they're both, I mean, they both have a vested interest in seeing their own platform succeed. I could easily see Microsoft suing Apple and Apple suing Microsoft over phone patents very quickly.
I think first thing they do is they take out their competitors, they sue them.
And then they go head-to-head against each other.
Yeah, and Ballmer has said, we're in a very long-term game because we know we missed the platform cycle.
Right.
So our approach now is very long-term.
Right.
And so maybe stage one, a long term, is you make these kind of keep your, you know, your enemies closer kind of deals, and they do it. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. All I know is I don't like it. I don't care for it at all.
It's a bad thing. It's a bad sign for Android, though, because the two premier platform makers now for Android, the two premier hardware manufacturers, are both getting sued.
Are big time under fire. And this comes at a time when right now Android is top dog.
You got to say,
Android is winning right now.
If you're going to have a buddy have your back, we'll see what Google does. But Google's going to have, Google's got deep pockets.
Google turns out has a few dollars to spare. Yeah. They got a couple of bucks kicking around. They were going to grab a pizza tonight, but instead, they're going to throw the pizza money over HTC's way, maybe.
Yep.
We'll see.
Now they have to have only the single topping pizza. All right, Brian.
they got to go down to Domino's.
Cut the pizza out, Brian.
What they do is they get the cheap hot and readys.
Right.
Instead of splurging on the really nice round table with all the works, they just get the pepperoni hot and ready.
I like
for
round
five
table.
Bucks, you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
Dude, I could really go for a round table pizza right now. I'm really hungry. First, I was thinking I wanted a Belgian waffle.
Yeah.
For those listening to the show, not live, this is what you're missing out on. We had about a 27-minute Belgian waffle discussion before the show
kicked off. It was really a tasty
today.
Discussion.
And I determined at the end of that discussion that I did indeed want a Belgian waffle, that they would indeed taste good in my mouth. But now I'm thinking maybe I'll even have a pizza. Pizza and Belgian waffle.
Before we move on, Rikai in the chat room says that he believes that Microsoft and Oracle are working together on the backside to finance an entire attack against Android.
Dude, nobody's working with Oracle because nobody likes crazy Larry. And you know what's horrible?
I just
said the word crazy Larry, and I'm probably going to get sued for it. But I'm not the one who came up with that. That's been like on a bunch of blogs and talking about it.
I really respect Larry.
Larry Ellison's my hero, and I said that in a satirical way. Therefore, I am protected.
You waved to my Larry sign when you walked in, right?
Oh, yeah. I say, hi, Larry, every time I walk into Steve's house. Yeah. Or Chris's house. Whatever the hell's
going on. All right, bro. Let's talk about the Ubuntu One music app for Android. This is not – I'm making this more than just an Android pick because there's also some support in Rhythmbox for the new Ubuntu One music store coming in the next Ubuntu.
There is.
So this is – say you buy a bunch of music on the Ubuntu One store, which I have yet to do. But say you've bought a lot. You can now stream all of it on demand. Hypothetically, Brian, you would be able to stream it all to your Android device.
Well, that's pretty cool. I dig that. Yeah.
And I think they've also got an iPhone version, and I'm sure there's other platforms they're working on. And it's streaming or syncing, I believe. It doesn't support OGG, which is too bad since it's funny, since there's not – you can – with the new Ubuntu 10.10 especially, it's easier to get MP3 support. Doesn't support MP3 out of the box,
But the Ubuntu One Music Store is MP3.
You see the conflict there? Your operating system doesn't actually support MP3s unless you install a codec in which it warns you not to install.
Well, there's a checkbox.
Yeah.
When you do in the installer now, there's an MP3 checkbox.
And it's the Fluendo one.
Yeah.
That's great.
No, it's fantastic.
But it does say you might not be allowed to do this. I might be legit with the Fluendo player.
I think it's legit with the Fluendo player.
But it's not by default.
It's not by default. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny. But I do really like the... Ubuntu One whole sync system they're doing with the music.
I
like the tie-in with Rhythmbox, and I like the Android application. So the Ubuntu One Music Store is really offering a lot of features that are really kind of putting it up above some of the other stores. So they could actually be developing a really great product here.
It is looking pretty cool. I'm still a little on the fence with the overall Ubuntu Store ecosystem, just because I'm really anxious to see what's going to happen with the Ubuntu Software Store.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Ubuntu One Music Store, you know, I can get, you know, similar prices going through Amazon.
Yeah, that's true. But what I like that they're doing here,
I can still use, like these sorts of services. I can buy my music elsewhere, copy them into my music folder up in Ubuntu One, and I still get the same benefits.
The nice thing about the Ubuntu One Music Store is it uses that 7-digital digital locker backend, so everything you buy is always
backed up.
Yeah, it's always on there.
I dig that a lot.
Yeah. So that's something to check out
happy with it.
Yeah. I'll have a link to the show notes if you want to see that. Now, while we're talking about music, why don't we touch on the new release of Banshees? Because I think it's both our personal favorite music player.
Banshees pimping.
Yeah, right? The new Banshees out. And I'd say now they're bringing in their own competing MP3 store, and that's the Amazon MP3 store. They're integrating in that downloader. If you've ever bought music from Amazon, they try to get you to use their downloader. Integrated into Banshees, so now you can shop from within the Amazon store and download all within Banshees. Have it add to your library.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
I know. That's a nice feature. The other really great feature that I'm excited about, you know, for the show and things like that, is they're integrating in the Miro podcasting directory right into Banshees too, so you can search for podcasts inside.
Love that.
Of course, you can do a Jupyter Broadcasting search on there and get our video versions and all that kind
of
stuff.
Of course you can, because it's fantastical.
And then it downloads and syncs right into Banshees every time there's a new release.
Banshees so great.
This new Banshees is looking so slick. And
love Banshees.
And the features are just so great. So, I'm really excited about a Banshees. Banshees going to tie in with the new Ubuntu Sound applet menu that they're coming out with, too. So if you're going to run Ubuntu, you'll have to install Banshees separately. It's not going to ship with it anymore, but you can get that. And it's also going to support importing media from Rhythmbox and things like that. So the migration from Rhythmbox to Banshees, if you want to add Banshees after your installation, should be really smooth.
Yeah, it should be clean. But plus, I mean, come on, you've already got all your music floating around anyway, and you know they all can kind of organize your music by the tags and by the albums and whatnot, so you're fine.
You're easy.
You can move around, jump around, jump.
Now, I thought maybe I'd have you take a look at this last story, Brian, because there's a couple of tidbits in it that I'd like you to kind of pick out. Now, we're talking about I think his name is Mike McGrath, and he's
his name is Mike McGrath. He is
the coordinator, right?
He is the Fedora Infrastructure League, infrastructure lead, not league.
And what we get now, because of the way Linux distributions work, an open source project, the you know the management side, even the big vision stuff is often done out in the open and mailing lists and forum discussions, things like that. So unlike commercial software, we kind of get a peek under the hood about some of the really big pivotal moments in the distribution.
Yeah.
And this could turn out to be one of them.
It's interesting. Well, you know, technically, so I don't know Mike. I don't know Mike McGrath. Let's try and get him on the show. Mike, give us an email. You know, so I can't really say, but he is the Fedora infrastructure lead. He's, you know, he helps to coordinate, according to his page on Fedora, the efforts of the Fedora infrastructure team, help mature the Fedora project, and efforts beyond just the Fedora distribution, and the like. So you know, he's involved. He's an active member. Mm-hmm. And you know, mm-hmm. He's a lead. He's not, you know, just some peon. He's a lead, unless leads in Fedora terms mean, you know, peon.
Yeah,
which is entirely possible. I don't know.
I kind of get from the general tone of his posting here that he's probably sort of the lead, a visionary guy.
That's kind of what I gather too. So he sent out this email.
Yeah.
And it's a long email with a lot of responses.
Yeah,
people talked about this.
This is one of those bombshell emails that goes out to a mailing list. He's kind of throwing down here, saying that he thinks maybe they should make an entire direction.
So they want to make a huge change, and I'm just going to go ahead and read part of this email. So you know what? So you're not getting it through a filter. Well, you're getting it through my mouth filter, but you know. So I promise to not make him sound too retarded. I'm no lame duck, I swear.
Oh, Brian.
All right. I'm going to read it normal. I'm going to read it and make him sound awesome. Here we go. I am no lame duck, I swear. This is a pretty dramatic proposal. My hopes are it will generate much discussion. There is no secret, I'm not big on the future of the desktop. And there's a little footnote here where he describes desktop later on. With great reflection and further research, I've come to realize something else. Google is about to destroy just about everyone.
Whoa.
There's a tiny handful of people that don't like the idea of cloud computing and information, in quotes, in the cloud. The majority of the world, though, is in love, though I'm adding a few words here because his grammar is terrible.
Now, you're not a big fan of stuff in the cloud, though, so...
No, I'm not. Yeah. The majority of the world, though, in love with it, or will be, and not know it. I don't know what that sentence really is trying to say. Free software is in no position to compete with the web-based applications of the Google of tomorrow. So then he goes on to talk basically about how... you know, HTML5 and JavaScript are the future. They are the future of everything. Web-based technologies.
Maybe Fedora should shift from a standard desktop to more of a platform to build these technologies of the future.
Right.
Now, he has in the past blogged about the death of the Linux desktop. He, you know, because the cute term is the year of the Linux desktop. His term is the death of the year of the Linux desktop. So, and he's gone on to some length on his LiveJournal page about why he thinks maybe this is just never going to happen. So his approach is maybe we should build a tools around making HTML5 and JavaScript type applications. At least that's kind of the general gist of his post on the Fedora mailing list. We'll link to it so you can read it yourself.
So his big thing. So what am I proposing? I think Fedora should slowly transition itself to be similar to how the Apache Software Foundation is set up.
Hmm.
He says setup there is one word, which is the improper use of the word setup. There should be two words there.
Oh, Brian.
We should put more resources into Fedora hosted and grow it. Perhaps our new infrastructure lead would agree. He is the new infrastructure lead. At least according to the website, I guess. If not, then they need to update their website. But the infrastructure is only one tiny part of it. We build these applications, get communities around them, then let others actually run them. We'd need engineering, coordinators, architects, planners, not just from Red Hat, but from other major stakeholders as well. Recreate these tools for others. And honestly, it goes into just this big hypothetical thing, but I think basically the gist of it is, yeah, they make Fedora into something that's more of a platform for cloud-based.
He thinks this is an opportunity.
Computing.
And to be honest with you, I don't know if I completely disagree. And here's why I'm saying this. Now, this could be bad for, if say Fedora, say 3 years down the road, Fedora makes this transition to mainly, essentially this would be a web developer's distribution or something is what I'm reading here. Now, That would mean that Fedora, who pioneered a lot of the work on the GNOME desktop, you know, like Network Manager and AIGLX and things like that, things that I always go to as my go-to references for Fedora, yeah. that they truly did help the Linux desktop.
And oh, absolutely.
If they shift focus away and more into a developer, web developer, I mean, what does that mean? Is that like XFCE and Bluefish? What do we?
I'm not really certain. His final paragraph here, honestly, is the one that kind of made me cock my head to the side here.
All right.
And he says, and I quote, "There's no reason in the world we can't spread free software via web application / cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though someone chooses to run Windows or OS X, there's no reason they can't do their primary computing on free software, perhaps provided by their ISP, their business, other ISPs." Okay, start with, if they're running Windows and OS X, they're not doing their primary computing on free software. They're doing their primary computing on Windows and OS X. What the hell are you talking about?
But he's saying maybe they should be. I mean, they should be. I mean,
no, but
how many, like,
if you're running Windows and OS 10,
you're running
proprietary closed source software.
Like probably some of the Adobes or something.
Free software.
But it should be. So maybe they could make.
Is he saying Windows and OS 10 should be open source and Fedora can do it?
He's saying that they should make the open source desktop for those people to use to build those applications in the future. Hey, you look at the web. The web's huge.
Even though someone chooses to run Windows or OS X, there's no reason they can't do their primary computing on free software. So if someone is using Windows and OS X, they can still do their computing on free software.
Okay.
That doesn't make any sense.
He mentioned earlier in his post something about Fedora hosted.
So if they're just talking about virtualization or just making everything free software focus is all about web software?
I truly believe Fedora back-end oriented distribution. I think to them primary computing is what you do on a server.
Really?
I don't know because this to me is a little jumbled. It's I think Mike maybe has been having some inspirations and some breakthroughs on where he thinks the future of Linux is going. And I don't necessarily disagree that the future of web development is going to be maybe the biggest place where people will make applications-esque in the future. And a lot of them are doing it on Macs today. I mean, Macs are huge among web developers. Maybe they could be doing their work under Fedora. Maybe they could be hosting under Fedora. Honestly, it's a little scary to me because Red Hat Linux Desktop was the big desktop.
Yep.
Then it became Fedora. They have innovated in some interesting ways. I mean, today's episode, we're going to feature the big features in the new distributions.
Yeah.
Nobody's really innovating. Fedora's got some innovation there. It's all primarily back-end stuff. I don't know where this is going. I'm curious to know, I guess, what the audience thinks on this. I want to get the audience's input because I'm still kind of a little foggy on all of this.
I don't know. See, I mean, I love cloud computing and the convenience of it, and I hate cloud computing and the convenience of it.
The security, the
lack of control, the lack of ownership of your own data.
Look at all of the Google stuff. It's all closed source. It all runs on top of open source, but all the user-facing stuff, for the most part, is closed source.
Right.
You look at a lot of the web applications out there. This is a whole new revolution of applications that are all proprietary.
I don't know. I look at this and, you know, I don't know what to make of it. I honestly have no idea what to make of it. I mean, obviously, you know, it spun off a whole thread, and it's just, you know,
an interesting thread.
It's an interesting thread. It's honestly worth a read if you want to read through it to get kind of an idea of some of the thoughts of the Fedora community and the members in the Fedora project. But realistically, I look at this and I'm like, well, you know, Fedora has kind of like, you know, jumped the shark in terms of, you know, desktop usage. I mean, that's not their focus.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, the other projects are overtaking them. So maybe it is time for them to say, you know what, let's just do something totally different. Let's just make web apps.
And it's not to say that, Rikai kind of hinted this in the chat room, but it's not to say that you couldn't have the main Fedora focus be on this, whatever this would end up being, and then you could have, like, you know how there's offshoots of Fedora? Yeah. They're like the KDE-specific spin and things like that. Maybe you'd have a desktop-specific spin. And so the people who are really, really passionate about the desktop in the Fedora project could maybe maybe coalesce into a smaller subgroup and then focus on doing a spin. Because Fedora is really easy to do spins.
It is super easy.
Maybe. Who knows?
I don't know.
Who knows,
I don't know.
Brian?
I read this and I'm like, what? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't get it.
All right, Brian. Well, that's all the news.
I feel like a curmudgeon standing on his porch.
That's all the grumpy news.
Yelling at the kids.
For this week.
That's right.
Brian, I thought it would be excellent timing with all the big distros coming out over the next few months. Let's take a look, see if they really bring anything to the table.
Okay.
You know what they got.
I think that's a great idea. We'll go with the big top three. We'll go with the Ubuntu, the OpenSUSE, and the Fedora.
Now, I gotta make a disclaimer. If you're going with DistroWatch numbers here, Mint should be in this list. The reason I'm not going to put Mint there just yet is because traditionally on the show, we talk about these three.
These are the big three. I mean, Mint is based on Ubuntu. I mean, at least for now, there is a Debian version of Mint. But come on, they're really that's what they are. They're like an Ubuntu respin, more or less. And they do have a big market share. But we talk about them. We talk about them kind of as an alternative, Ubuntu alternative.
And I think that's because maybe there's they feel much more community based. More community finance.
Yeah.
The other distros see more corporate finance,
yeah,
I guess.
Which is really impressive for Mint. But let's focus on these three right now, because these are the three big bases.
So Ubuntu 10.10, both of us have been kicking the tires for a little while now.
Yep.
And
it comes out in just a couple of weeks. It comes out this
October 10th,
month.
If everything stays all lined up. Now, here's the thing about Ubuntu. I really dug around, Brian. I mean, I really dug around for the features of Ubuntu. Now, this has kind of been stated before by Canonical to sort of set expectations. This isn't going to be a huge one.
No.
But usually when you have these non-long-term support versions, you like to see a little something added, a little spiced up, a little kicked up a few notches.
Yeah.
The Ubuntu 10.10's main...
Do something crazy.
Main number one feature is Shotwell.
Yep.
Now...
Sure enough.
We've reviewed Shotwell. We've talked about Shotwell.
Hey, scroll that image up just a little bit so everyone can see that in the picture. This is a screenshot of what Shotwell looks like right now.
Mm-hmm.
Those are...
Pictures?
Those are pictures with little rounded corners on it. And here's the problem I have with Shotwell right now. Shotwell's gotten a lot better. It's gotten a lot smoother.
Sir, yes, sir.
It does a lot better job now. It can actually import photos properly now, whereas when Fedora said, okay, we're grabbing Shotwell, it didn't work at all.
We tried, and it was crashing constantly.
It would crash when you import a single JPEG is what I had happen. Mm. And that wasn't just one JPEG. That was any JPEG I could find on the internet. So I'm not joking. But now it is functional now.
Yeah.
It works. It actually has a fair number of features. It is not as feature-rich as FSpot, the application is replacing. It is not as well-liked as FSpot, as in my opinion, but as by this reviewer at least. But it is working, and it is functional, and it will do the job. So I'm not going to harsh on Ubuntu for grabbing Shotwell.
Right. However, we're kind of over it.
I still don't feel like it's a step up. We don't get any new feature because it's
true.
Shotwell.
So it is interesting to list it as like the number one feature.
It's weird to list it as a number one feature because there's no new amazing feature you get because it's Shotwell. It's just that it is Shotwell, except that it's uglier than FSpot right now. That's the thing that bothers me a little bit, because Ubuntu 10.10 really looks nice.
Now,
The rest of Ubuntu 10.10, they've done a great job of making it look better and better and better, and in this one sense, they go backwards.
Specifically speaking of that, they have I'm showing the old one here. There's not really a spot up on the web yet where you can find all of the new features of the next version of Ubuntu, even though it's just a couple of days away. So I'm showing you the old screenshots here of Ubuntu, and they've updated the bootloader screen.
Yeah, it looks
they've
a little
made
nicer.
It load a little faster. So, again, we are getting fast boot as a feature. I think we've been covering that for 2 years now, but that's okay.
Three.
Fast boot's good.
Three. At
three
least
years.
Three.
Okay, okay.
You know what? Honestly, it boots fast enough. Knock it off. Knock it off. Knock it off, guys.
You're
giving me a migraine. Like, right here, I think I have a brain cancer. Right here.
It says right fast boot on it.
It's right like here.
Yeah.
It's getting bigger.
Yeah.
Every 6 months, it gets a little bigger, and it takes up more of my brain space.
Yeah.
And I don't like that at all.
I hear
so
you.
So knock it off, guys. I don't care. It boots in, like, come on, like 20 seconds. It booted in, like, 20 seconds 6 months ago.
I used to only reboot once a week.
It booted, like, 20 seconds a year and a half ago. It booted in 20 seconds, like, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
What is the difference here? So here's a kicker.
Maybe it's because they add stuff and they still manage to keep it booting fast.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
But so I saw this. I have a 10.10 beta CD, beta live CD that I've been using for a while. A couple weeks ago, I tried that against my Ubuntu 8.04 live CD.
Oh, and how did that go?
Same machine, booted imperceptibly different.
Really?
Like it was... If there was a speed increase, it was not noticeable at all. Now, granted, that is off the live CD, but come on.
And 1010, in my opinion, does boot and shut down extremely fast.
It does. It does a great job. But you know what? Our machines are faster now, and, well, it seems to be about the same as it was back then. So, come on. I'm sure you guys have done great work. That's not a big new feature.
The other big feature that they're introducing, well, I mean polishing, is Gwibber, which is a great... It's a great all-in-one tool for basically social media stuff.
It's great.
I
love Gwibber.
And what's great about these features so far is that I'm able just to show the screenshots and feature list from the last distro. So it's really helpful from a show preparation standpoint. I can just reuse the same stuff. Also, the other thing I can reuse is the integration with Ubuntu One and those kinds of things. So that's really handy for me because I didn't have to go look for anything else. I was just able to use last 6 months' stuff. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so that's about right. Now, of course, there is other stuff going on in the Ubuntu world.
Legitimately, there's some legitimate stuff, like the multi-touch.
The multi-touch stuff is going on. That's not going to affect that many people. But honestly, like, I was able to throw it on my tablet and everything worked out of the gate, including the full touch screen. It was fantastic. Now, enabling the multi-touch support wasn't there. I mean, I don't know if it doesn't seem like it's quite far enough along to where it'll ship full multi-touching gestures, but the touch screen drivers work and they work great, and that makes me happy.
And it looks like you can install something like UTouch and a couple other packages and you're ready to go.
Exactly.
It's just not on by default.
And we've also got the store in the Ubuntu Software Center, which while it may only have one application in it, it's still a store, and honestly, that is a major step forward, and that is a significant feature for an unstable, non-long-term support release,
now,
so I can go with that.
X11 seems to be working, and I've heard people in the chat room say this too, like dual monitor support seems to be working a lot better. I've experienced dual monitor support much improved in 1010 so
much
far.
Much improved.
I'm having an issue where, it's funny, at the GNOME login screen, my keyboard and mouse work perfectly, but as soon as GNOME logs in, my keyboard quits working completely. I can still do like Control Alt F1 and get to the text console and type fine, but I can't do anything in the GUI and I can't click on anything. I can move the mouse pointer, but I can't click.
Really?
I can unplug USB device, plug them back in, no dice. Looked it up. There's a 2006 bug that I think is still affecting me and something to do with my USB controller. But
strange.
It sucks. Yeah, it sucks because it didn't happen right away. It took like a week, but then it just started to happen. I don't know if there's a package update or what. But otherwise, I think 1010 is great. I think the features that are really great in 1010 aren't listed anywhere on Canonical's site other than in Launchpad. Only place I can seem to find the actual real new features to 1010. It's almost like they're intentionally not making a big deal.
See, I mean, we know because we've been following them so closely. But honestly, if I wasn't, I would have a hard time figuring out what the new features are. If you go to Ubuntu.com now, you can grab the 10.10 release candidate. You can grab it and play with it, and you can look through everything. But it doesn't really tell you what the new features are. So from a marketing perspective, not so hot, but that's okay because it's not out yet.
Yeah, and I'm sure that'll spin up once they get
closer. They've got
days.
7 days.
Yeah.
They've got a week from today. A week. It comes out on Sunday?
I guess so, maybe. Let's see. The 10th is Sunday.
So it comes out next Sunday.
Yeah.
So, the next Linux Action Show.
We'll have the review.
Well, it'll be the inaugural episode of season
That'll be cool. We'll be kicking off season 14 doing the Ubuntu 10.10 review.
Yeah, that's actually very handy.
Now, let's shift gears to talk a little OpenSUSE. OpenSUSE, if you recall, actually shifted to an 8th month release cycle.
That just messes with my head.
I honestly think it seems like Ubuntu is falling into once a year major features, the follow-up release is polish. Now,
which is good.
I know, but it almost is like an admission that 6 month cycle is too fast.
Yeah.
And OpenSUSE has shifted to the 8th month, which means that their next release will be coming out on March 10th of 2011. That sucker don't even land till next year.
Yep.
And its big new feature will be KDE 4.5. By the time they ship, they won't be the first 4.5 distro. I think Kubuntu actually will get that title,
probably,
followed by Fedora, and then OpenSUSE. But OpenSUSE really does the polish with KDE.
Honestly,
that's where you're going to see a KDE desktop shine.
OpenSUSE is my favorite KDE distro. I mean, the Kubuntu guys do a great job, and I'm sure it's technically possible to run KDE on Fedora, but would you even try?
It sounds like Ubuntu itself is getting a lot of improvements. It sounds like there's going to be a new installer.
Yeah.
Maybe we might take a look at Kubuntu separately. So OpenSUSE, rocking KDE 4.5, not revolutionary. That's just sort of a big package, right?
Well, KDE 4.5 has a lot of cool stuff in it. So that's kind of an all-encompassing thing. So if you're running OpenSUSE from the KDE side, you're
going
to get
stuff.
A lot of new features. And the main like Office apps and everything are revved to be much cooler. So that's amazing. That's actually a significant upgrade.
I think so.
Outside of KDE, though,
I'm having a hard time finding the big features.
Me too.
Z-Sync. Now, we're getting pretty low level here, but Z-Sync is an addition to their package manager. My understanding is correctly. It, say you're doing an update and you know, only a few bytes in a program change for a security fix. It's supposed to just be able to grab the delta there and grab the changes. Now, Fedora's been doing something like this with Yum.
Yep.
Now, OpenSUSE is introducing this in 11.4.
That's very good.
I like that. And then they're also doing other general speed improvements, stability improvements to their package manager. It's always something that they've been tweaking on for a while.
Now, that's pretty good. You know, it's most of the really great stuff on the SUSE side of things, from my mind, is all in their online services stuff.
Right.
You know, the OpenSUSE build service and the SUSE studio, which, by the way, is awesome.
Yeah.
I actually have, if you go over to, I don't even know where I have that listed up somewhere. I've got it listed somewhere.
Okay.
I'll post a link somewhere. But I actually have I made a OpenSUSE-based Illumination Software Creation Station, which I think is a great name all by itself.
The Illumination Station? Wait.
Illumination Software Creation Station. Yeah.
So, I mean, like
but basically, I just use SUSE Studio to kind of build with a little help from some nice people from the project.
Oh, that's
kind of helped me kind of figure out how to do it and put it all together right. And so it's just such a great. I'm going to use my words now.
A great service?
It's such a good set of tools.
Yeah, and so is the build service, because you can really get some fresh packages and they tie
that
in there.
I like that a lot.
It is. That's where a lot of innovation is happening.
But that's where, in my mind, the innovation is happening. And that, to me, makes OpenSUSE itself worth so much more.
Well, and it's value that they can build completely independent of the distro.
Right.
So the distro can keep innovating, like with KDE 4.5. That's not – I hate to call it innovation. I don't – like Ubuntu's other main feature was the new version of GNOME. I hate to say that's the big feature, but it does encompass so much, and it really is the implementation of that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, therefore, that's theirs is 4.5, and that's going to be something to look forward to.
Yeah, so that's actually pretty big. And so I look at, like, the what I see when all these new releases are out, and we'll get into Fedora in a second, but what I see so great about what OpenSUSE and what the team at Novell is offering, hopefully it remains Novell or something, as long as they just keep going.
The
team that's working on those OpenSUSE services, is how easy it is to use those tools for your own company, for your own home. So if I want to switch my whole business over to Linux, I just create one distro that is in the OpenSUSE studio.
Could be like corporate XYZ.
Yeah, exactly.
Desktop,
it's Brian's crazy business distro. and it has exactly what I need, no more, no less. Always up to date, always with the latest security patches.
Yep.
And every time I want to put someone onto it, I just go download the VMware image, go download the live CD.
And you can brand it.
Done.
You can add your own logo.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So for me, that's a great feature. And I have a hard time talking about OpenSUSE now without talking about those services. To me, those are part of the service.
It's like
we talk about the Ubuntu One Music Store when we talk about Ubuntu.
Or Ubuntu One Sync.
It's part of it now.
I totally agree. Yep. Now, the Fedora dudes are rocking their release. They're coming up with Fedora number 14.
Fedora 14. Wow, how long has it been since we lost the core?
Six?
Fedora Core 6 was core?
I think so.
Wow.
That's been a long time.
That was a long time ago. You feel old.
The Fedora Core, that just flows so well.
Fedora Core.
Mm-hmm.
It made it sound hardcore.
Yeah.
It made it sound like it comes from the center of the earth.
It could be. Maybe if they go like the whole web development route, maybe the core will come back. I mean, who knows?
Is it weird that it kind of jumped the shark after it dropped the core?
It did kind
like
of,
I stopped,
in our opinion.
I stopped really liking Fedora after it dropped the core.
I think 6 was just a really great release.
I think it was an amazing release.
It was fast. The artwork was beautiful. I mean, 6, I really...
Honestly, if you dialed this back in time and, you know, Ubuntu was still alive and everything else was then, I'd still use Fedora
Core
6.
You can find our gushing review of Fedora Core 6.
It was great.
Yeah.
What's happening with 14?
They're deciding to take a different route than everybody else. Now, Fedora already includes MeeGo. They're including MeeGo 1.0. And a lot of customizations for that. So if you have a netbook or something like that, you can actually run a MeeGo desktop interface on Fedora.
That's nice.
That is
nice. I like
that. Could be great for MeeGo development.
It could be awesome for MeeGo development.
They're including a ton of development-focused stuff. Encoding libraries, Python 2.7, a lot of GNU Step. I mean, a lot of stuff that...
All right, hold on a second. What did you just say?
GNU Step. You know, the GNU Step, right? Because it's so... everybody uses GNU Step.
So wait, no wait.
Right? Ryan, don't you find GNU Step useful?
Hey, Chris.
Yeah, Brian.
I'm going to ask you to back up for a minute.
All right.
So they're including GNU Step.
Yeah, Brian.
By default.
I you know, it doesn't say, but I think so. So, I'm not positive.
If
by
you
default.
Are unfamiliar with GNU Step, go search for that. Go Bing that, and
do a quick Bing,
do a little Bing, and find out what GNU Step is. It is an open source, essentially re-implementation of the OpenStep frameworks, mm-hmm. which is now Cocoa and the like under macOS.
And
10.
You can trace
the old NextStep frameworks.
Yep, NextStep.
Yeah, so it's actually very cool. It's very powerful. It's a great set of tools. It's a great API.
Why is it so ugly?
Well, it's it looks like NextStep and OpenStep used to. It looks like macOS 10 did before they added the blue pulsating button, macOS 10. So that's what it looked like.
Is there active development going on with GNU? I mean, I'm sure Fedora.
Yeah, no, it's under development.
Okay. So yeah. I mean, I know it's under active development, but there's an active.
It is pretty ugly though. Look at that.
Are there people actually using it though?
Oh, I'm sure some people are.
Okay.
But I just think this is interesting because, I don't know. This is interesting to me. Why? I mean, if you've got space.
Yeah.
On your medium, on your CD or your DVD.
I had a little monitor.
Why not throw some cool tools on there, right?
Even if
only two people use them, why not? If there's some space.
If you've got a DVD and you're only using 2 gigs of it. You know what? You know what they ought to do? Maybe they ought to just include a few episodes of the Linux Action Show.
You know what?
Use that free space wisely.
You know what that would be? That would show freedom. That would show that they embrace freedom.
Yeah.
And free software.
Yeah.
And free ideas.
Also, Brian, they have good taste. That would also show that.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to make you a deal, Fedora. If you, on your Fedora 14 DVD release, just the DVD version.
Okay, that's
include
fair.
One full episode of the Linux Action Show, one full one.
That's all we're asking for.
Unmodified, in its full. You can just download it straight from our website and
slap
it on there. You don't have to grab the Theora version.
You don't even
have to put it anywhere obvious. You can hide that sucker in the file system somewhere. I don't care where you stick it. You do that, I will say nothing but glowing, gushing good stuff about Fedora 14. Mm-hmm. I'm selling to you. This is how much I'm willing to do this. I am selling the review. I'm out and out saying
this
straight up.
Prize review has a price.
It has a price, yeah. And that is putting a full episode, any episode you want, from this current season, let's say.
Oh, okay. You're setting the limit there.
Just say
right.
Season 13. Well, that way it's a modern episode.
Yeah.
Put it on there. Hide it somewhere on the live DVD. Don't even have to install it. It just has to be on the live DVD when they boot up. It's on there, and people can watch it. And I will say 1.5 hour of praise, of glorious, glorious praise. I will talk about Fedora as if it is the most magical pony and unicorn dancing around with magical glitter dust flying off of its unicorny pointy thing and creating flowers that will live forever eventually turn into spaceships, which will take us to the promised land. That is how much good stuff I will say.
That's quite a bit of good stuff.
I'm laying that out there, Fedora.
I'm just saying, Brian.
I'm laying that out there.
Now, Fedora 14 will also include...
Wait, we should call this episode Brian Sells Out.
Brian's Price. The Linux Action Show. And now, Fedora 14 will be coming out November 2nd. That was delayed by a couple of days, but now they're on track for the 2nd of November. They'll be including a new...
So 1 month.
They call it a tech preview. Tech preview of Systemd, which will be replacing Systeminit. Ubuntu uses what? Upstart?
Yeah.
So it's sort of the guy that's going to get all your stuff going as the distribution boots up.
Yeah.
And they're going to include that in Fedora. I'm not sure what the advantages are of Systemd. I'm going to look into it, though, so that way when we
I'm
going to
start my own, though. It's going to be called Stuff and Things Starter.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got Chris.
That's pretty much what they do.
Chris will boot you. That's mine. Chris will boot you. Yeah.
Chris will boot you.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
So I'm going to look in, but I will look into Systemd, so when it comes time for the Fedora 14 review, I'll have a little bit of knowledge on that.
So now, and interesting, so because it's shipping KDE 4.5 mm-hmm. In Fedora 14, they're going to beat OpenSUSE to the punch by like half a year.
So will Kubuntu.
It's interesting.
Ubuntu's really going to beat them.
No, super big.
Assuming Kubuntu ships with Ubuntu around there. I would probably be willing, though, to check out Fedora 14 just to play with Mego 1.0. Not that I couldn't go get it now, but it's just nice. It's nice to get the distro with the packages.
Well, you can get it with SUSE now.
Yeah, you can get it. Well, there's PPAs for Ubuntu. I mean, you can get it now, but I like the idea that there's a distro out there that's like, no, this is something we really want to support.
Yeah, I like that too, actually. That's very, very good stuff. And I'll like it a whole lot more when our episode is on that live DVD, Fedora.
Yeah, maybe.
My voice kind of went negative there when I said Fedora. I mean, on that live DVD, Fedora.
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 Ding.
There we go. Ding.
Now, if we've missed some of the features you've been looking forward to in these distros,
wait, there is one more thing.
Oh,
here.
Go for it.
Something's missing.
What is it?
GNOME.
GNOME, yeah.
GNOME 3.
Yeah.
Where's GNOME 3?
It got delayed. They were talking in early. If you read the early announcement for Ubuntu 10.10, they make mention that maybe they'll kick off a new generation of desktops with GNOME 3.
Yep.
That got pulled back.
Yep. But there's no GNOME 3 and talked about in OpenSUSE 11.4.
Do you care?
Kinda.
I don't.
I mean, it's GNOME 3, dude.
Yeah, who cares?
I've been waiting for GNOME 3 for like 47 years.
Name one thing you're looking forward to in GNOME 3.
Nothing. I got nothing I'm looking forward to. But it's GNOME 3, dude.
I know.
It's GNOME 3.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, dude.
They're going to be shipping with GNOME 2.32 because GNOME 3 was pushed back till March.
Oh.
GNOME 2.32, though.
So OpenSUSE could ship with it.
Well, possibly. Yeah, they haven't said firmly yet for OpenSUSE. No. OpenSUSE still has a pretty loose features list. 3.0 is the next GNOME release, though. This is it.
This is it.
The GNOME dudes pushed some features back that were going to be in 2.32 just to make sure this one's a good, solid release, because I think they figure some distros are going to hang on this for a little while.
Yeah.
So this, you remember when KDE did that in the 3 genre, the 3.3.5 and
there
stuff
was
like that
one final golden
one. Yeah, like
one.
The 3.3.6 or
just,
something
that got
it was
really
up.
Solid, mm-hmm. And they just let it be there for a while.
I think that's kind of what they're going for. And honestly, I'm okay with it. I really don't know why I want GNOME 3.
Honestly? Because it could be cool.
Could be
like,
cool.
Like, I looked at...
Could
I don't
really
know.
Cool.
Like
could also be a tragedy.
KDE 4 was a tragedy. But KDE 4.5 and 4.4 and 4.3,
cool.
Rocking awesome.
And that could be.
So that's kind of what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that GNOME 3 has just done not quite as good of a job of pimping as KDE did. You know
how
what
impressed
I mean?
Are you with the GNOME guys? I mean, GNOME 2 has been out for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
And they've...
They've got staying power.
They're not even to 2.5.
No.
They just did very small version revs.
Yeah.
They resisted that whole marketing temptation.
They did.
Because they could be, like, with this many years, they could be on GNOME 7.0 by now.
See, this is what I'm saying. Maybe they got something super secret.
GNOME in 3D.
GNOME 3D.
Yeah, RA is dead, says GNOME in 3D will be in 3.0.
Well, isn't that Compass?
That's true, but you need something like where you put glasses on.
I do not want.
And
if I have to
like,
put,
jump out at your
if
eye.
If I have to put glasses. Dude, someone should do that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man. No, so I'm kind of anxious to see what GNOME 3 is going to be, because really, that's the future of it. Mm-hmm. That's the future of GNOME. I mean, we can't sit on 2.32 forever. I mean, we're just not going to. Eventually, we're going to need some features added to it.
I do agree with you.
So it's either going to be KDE or it's going to be GNOME. And I'm sorry, the other desktops don't count. They just don't. XFCE is not going to count. It's just it's not there. It's not a big deal. But so it's going to be one of the two.
Yeah, I'm looking.
I want to see what happens with GNOME 3. I'm going to compare it against the inaugural release of GNOME of KDE 4.0.
I think it's fair.
And see how they stack up.
Yeah.
I'm anxious.
And maybe there is a chance that might make it in 11.4 of OpenSUSE.
Well, we can hope.
See, they, I don't know. That's really
it's
tight.
Really close. So there's not a lot of margin for error there. So
yeah,
I don't know.
OpenSUSE 11.4, boy, I bet these guys are going to be kicking themselves because OpenSUSE comes out on March 10th.
It's also not going to happen in Ubuntu 11.04 because there's not, or at least likely not, because there's not a lot of extra time in there either. So that means realistically, we'd be looking at this time next year before we see any big distros
to make it. To make it in the next version, the version after 10.10, the GNOME guys, they're really going to have to run that GNOME 3.0 right up in the beta, right in the release candidate. They're really going to test it.
Yeah, we're talking like December, January at the latest.
Yeah,
they're going
really
to have
close.
A lot. That's what KDE 4 did. They did. It was like a January launch, and they said KDE 4
is GNOME's
saying
March,
available.
Though.
They got to pull it back just by 2 months, guys. 2 months, pull it back, reel her in.
Well, wait,
and then
Ubuntu
push
comes
it
out in April?
Yeah.
So they might make it.
They might make it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll see.
We'll see. Anyway, I'm curious. I think that's one interesting thing that I think maybe a lot of these guys were hoping for GNOME 3. And that's why we're not seeing necessarily a lot of new features all over the place.
I got to say, honestly, looking back at this, the innovation here, I know there's a lot going under the hood that they're not properly promoting.
Yeah.
But if you just look at the end user facing features and some of the stuff that we've heard about, it's not a lot of innovation going from the big dogs. I reviewed what Mepis was doing. I reviewed what Sabayon was doing. You know, I checked out Arch. Those guys are a lot better at spotlighting their features and a lot better at spotlighting screenshots of the new distro, even their beta stuff. It's interesting to see the little scrappy guys doing a little better in this area.
I do like the underdog. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. We're Linux users. We root for the underdog. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether we admit it or not, that's like half the reason we're here. It's because we root for the underdog.
It almost seems like complacency in a way when you see the smaller distros really working to communicate to their users, this is what you're going to get in the next release. And this whole round, Fedora, OpenSUSE, and Ubuntu really is a struggle to actually get the meat unless there just isn't any to be found. It could be that maybe they're communicating 100% effectively and there's just nothing to communicate. Not anything of substance.
It could be. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff going on right now. I think all three distros are doing a lot right now. Mm-hmm. I think there's just a lot of things that aren't maybe ready to quite push out there.
And you figure
it's not like the multi-touch gesture stuff.
Yeah,
they're not going to really push it for 10.10 because it's not quite ready for everyone. But maybe in 11.04,
it's the first time it's been there.
We'll get a good 6 months of fine tuning it. And I think this time next year, I think we're going to see the fruits of a lot of that labor.
Yep.
It's hard to wait because I'm impatient.
Well, 6 months feels like it goes by so fast when you're looking at the distros.
For sure.
But then when the new one lands, it seems like the next one's so far away.
So far.
But then, right as we get to this point, it feels like it's just been a few weeks. It's funny how that works. All right, Brian. That's our look at what the new big guys are going to be doing in their features. And also, that's the tease for the 10.10 review next week.
Next week at this exact time. It's amazing.
I'm looking forward to it already.
It's like, I wanted to do a same bat time, same bat channel reference, but can we do that?
Copywritten?
I think it might be.
So we better not mention the bat time and the bat channel.
Wait, I think we can say same bat time, same bat channel, but this is like a parody.
The same action time, same action channel.
Parody, right?
Yeah.
It's covered.
Fair use.
It's fair use. Right. And that brings us to the end of this week's Linux Action Show. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I want to reiterate a couple of items here real quick.
Oh, okay.
I will be at the
Android
F5 building in Seattle on October 12th. That's Thursday, October 12th at 6:30 p.m. for the Seattle Android Developer User Group. I'll be doing a little presentation on Illumination Software Creator there.
Not the week this came out, but the week after. That's a Tuesday.
That's a week from this coming Tuesday.
Yes,
or
sir.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't really know. I'm hoping that someone remembers for me and pushes me down there.
Probably.
So I'll be giving a little speech down there. I'll be talking about, Rapture and why it's a better way for people to work and produce science. I'm not really sure what I'm going to be talking about, but I'll be down there.
It should be a lot of fun.
I'll be actually showing off Illumination Software Creator 2.2 and all of its new fancy new features and goodges and whatnots and all those sorts of things and the who's and what's.
You got to tell those Android developers they can make their applications with blocks now.
Oh man, I got some serious stuff to show those guys.
Yeah,
I got some tricks up my sleeve. It's gonna be fun.
Well, if somebody's listening in the area, they should meet up with you there.
And I'm gonna be doing it on my touchscreen tablet. So here's the thing: if you want to see a demonstration of building an application with your finger on a screen,
that's awesome.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah,
it's kind of fun to do, especially if you have a better finger than mine. Mine's a little fat, and you touch it on the screen, and
you have a hand model come in with you.
Yeah, hand model.
Yeah,
yeah. I'll get a booth babe that basically just someone with a nice hand.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's cheaper.
Everyone will be crowding around just to check out the person's hand.
Yeah.
Thing is, it's probably going to be a dude, guys. But you can imagine it's some really hot lady with a really hot hand.
Yeah. You know, if you just look from the hand up, you'll be fine. And just
hand up.
Yeah, just look.
You mean
the
hand?
The hand down.
Hand down.
I guess that would
or
be
hand,
down.
Hand off to the side.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because that's Anyway, so that's coming up. If you want to get a hold of us, facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting, JupiterColony.com. That's our forum. We're over on Twitter. I'm Brian Lunduke. He's Chris LAS. All sorts of fun happening there. You can check out my blog over at lunduke.com. All that good stuff.
I like that, bro.
Lots and lots of fun.
I should say, we want to hear your thoughts on the new distro features, too, what you're looking forward to. So those places he just mentioned, if you want to leave us a comment And also, since the 1010 review is coming up, now is your chance to get a comment or a suggestion or a question in to make it into the next episode.
Now, if you've been using the release candidate of Ubuntu and you have some thoughts, feel free to drop us an email, or preferably go into the forum and post your thoughts there so other people can get in the conversation and we can pull some of those tidbits in.
I love it.
Yeah, it should be fantastic. And the most important thing that's happening right now is that the show is almost over, so Brian can probably go have a waffle or some sort of a food type thing in his mouth, because Brian is very hungry right now.
We do this show live at 10 a.m. Pacific every Sunday over at jupiterbroadcasting.com/live, and one of the things between segments is we invented the waffle pizza.
We have the waffle pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Do we do that between segments or in the show? I've kind of forgotten now.
We might have done that in the show.
Here's the thing. We've been talking for about 2 hours, and so you've missed half the show, and I don't know what we recorded and what we didn't.
I don't either.
I'm hoping that we recorded the part we were supposed to record and not the vice versa.
It's very possible we get them flipped around. It could be a very different Linux Action Show. Okay, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Linux Action Show, and we'll see you back here next week.
That's a good point. All right, so let's see if I can get it back. Is that anything? Hoo-ah!